This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, where I have a special guest by popular demand. Dennis Camino will be rejoining us. The number to call in, of course, is 717-300-1698. 717-300-1698. The CIA is outdoing itself by coming up with a completely convoluted claim, a lawsuit alleging that Fox News and Trump supporter created a fake news story about Seth Rich in order to distract attention from the Russian hacking. You're getting this on NPR, CNN Money, other sources. This is about as ridiculous as it gets. Sean Spicer has been drawn into this, has issued a statement about meeting with people pushing the Seth Rich conspiracy. Rod Wheeler, who is this independent guy, is supposed to be an independent investigator, a black guy, who looked pretty good. You know, I thought on the face of it that he was legit, but now I believe he was a plant. Alleges in his lawsuit that there was coordination between Fox News and the White House. Fox News responded with a statement that said, in part, the accusation that FoxNews.com published Malia Zimmerman's story to help detract from coverage of the Russian collusion issue is completely erroneous. Of course, there was no Russian collusion. Part of the oddities of this is that CNN is publishing a story, lawsuit. Fox News concocted Seth Rich's story with oversight from the White House. Complete and total bullshit. And it's showing Megyn Kelly interviewing Julian Assange in relation to a photograph of Seth Rich. Now, I have been reporting for, I'm going to guess, at least 6 months about the death of Seth Rich. And let me see if I can get a fix on the date. Let's see. Well, 5/17/17. For multiple months, I've been reporting on Seth Rich's death. It was a huge story. The mainstream media has sought to suppress it. He was shot a couple of times on the street, but actually didn't even realize he'd been shot. I mean, this is so far removed from him being murdered on the spot. He actually was taken to Washington Center Hospital, where he died under highly unusual circumstances. Now, the point here about this CNN story is, as the White House worked with Fox News and a wealthy Republican donor to concoct a story about the murder of Democratic National Committee staffer Seth Rich, according to an explosive lawsuit filed Tuesday. Now, you can file anything you want in a lawsuit. You can file anyone for anyone, anything. You can make up stories, make up facts. That's clearly what is going on here. We know it's been well established independently that Seth Rich was leaking with the DNC emails to Julian Assange by way of Craig Murray, who was a UK ambassador to Uzbekistan, the head of a college and an intelligence analyst himself, that Julian was publishing them. They had stunning revelations, of course, about all kinds of scandals involving the Clinton Foundation, pay to play, and a host of others, including, of course, everything about Pizzagate. Both Craig Murray and Julian Assange have reported that they knew the leaker and that he was not Russian. After Seth died, Julian offered a $20,000 reward for information leading to the arrest and conviction of those responsible. Now, this is frankly not in doubt, but the mainstream media, being an instrument of the CIA, has been ignoring it and suppressing it. Here's something you'll never hear on the mainstream media. For example, this is 17 May 2017, Wednesday, 21:12. It's what? 9:12:50. Fourth-year surgery resident here who rotated at WHC, Washington Hospital Center, last year. It won't be hard to identify me, but I feel that I shouldn't stay silent. Seth Rich was shot twice, with three total gunshot wounds, entry and exit and entry. He was taken to the OR emergently, where we performed an X-lap and found a small injury to segment 3 of the liver, which was packed in several small bowel injuries, pretty common for gunshots to the back exiting the abdomen, which we resected, about 12 centimeters of bowel, and left him in discontinuity, didn't hook everything back up, with the intent of performing a washout in the morning. He did not have any major vascular injuries otherwise. I've seen dozens of worse cases than this, which survived, and nothing about his injuries suggested to me that he'd sustained a fatal wound. In the meantime, he was transferred to the ICU and transfused 2 units of blood, where his post-surgery crit came back at about 20. He was stable and not on any pressors, and it seemed pretty routine. About 8 hours after he arrived, we were swarmed by LEOs, law enforcement officers, and pretty much everything except the attending and a few nurses were kicked out of the ICU, disallowing visiting hours, normally every odd hour, not something we do routinely. It was weird as hell. At turnover that morning, we were instructed not to round on the VIP that came in last night. That's exactly what the attending said. And no one except for me and another resident had any idea who he was talking about. No one here was allowed to see Seth except for my attending when he died. No code was called. I rounded on patients literally next door, but was physically blocked from checking in on him. I've never seen anything like it before. And while I can't say 100% that he was allowed to die, I don't understand why he was treated like that. Take it how you may. I'm just one low-level doc, but something's fishy here, that's for sure. Now, Roger Stone has published a piece. Seth Rich was partying with Imran Awan on the night of his murder. Trump confident claims link between DNC staffer's death and disgraced Wasserman Schultz aide. According to Trump confidant Roger Stone, disgraced Debbie Wasserman Schultz aide, Imran Awan was with former DNC staffer Seth Rich on the night of his murder. Rich was murdered in an upscale area in Washington, D.C. on July 10th last year. But the killer or killers did not steal anything from the victim, rendering the police explanation about the incident that the incident was a robbery gone wrong doubtful. InfoWars reported on the questions surrounding Seth Rich's murder multiple times back in August last year, including how there was around an hour and a half unaccounted for time between Rich leaving a bar and being killed. Now, this sheds light on my point about covering it for so many months, because he died way back on July 10th. I mean, so I've been covering this a lot, many, many times. And not only that, but we have a photograph from the bar. Those doing this inquiry have spoken to members who were there who said, no, you don't need to know who was at the party because it had nothing to do with his death. But how would they possibly know that? I'm looking at a group of IT guys, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 altogether. Seth Rich in the front, a black IT guy on the right, and the man who appears to be Imran Awan, the third from the right. I mean, we even have a photograph to support it. Roger appears to be completely right. This is a huge story, not the pseudo crap being offered in this lawsuit. Get this. Blacklisted news. Judge Napolitano on when has had access to email of every member of Congress. Solid information. Source, iBank Coin. The rapidly unfolding case against Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Pakistani IT spy ring, already had huge implications for national security. Now the story apparently goes beyond just the Democrats the Awan family was working for. Judge Andrew Napolitano appeared on Fox Business Network on Monday, where he dropped a new bombshell. Not only did the Awans have access to the emails of every member of Congress, Imran Awan reportedly sold information to still unknown parties, which the FBI is currently investigating. Let me add, it's probably the Israelis, because other sources have suggested to me that he was, in fact, a Mossad asset. Napolitano. He was arrested for some financial crime. That's the tip of the iceberg. The real allegation against him is that he had access to the emails of every member of Congress, and he sold what he found in there. What did he sell, and to whom did he sell it? That's what the FBI wants to know. This may be a very, very serious national security situation. No doubt about that. Varney interviewing Napolitano. Wait a second. He was an IT worker along with his two Pakistani brothers for Debbie Wasserman Schultz and other Democrats in the House. And the theory is that he got access to all of their secrets or whatever and sold some? Napolitano, yes. And this was at the time that Congresswoman Schultz was also the chair of the DNC. So at this point, I don't believe they know what he sold and to whom he sold it, but they do know what he had access to, which is virtually everything in the House of Representatives, which would include classified material in the House Intelligence Committee. Here's a brand new report from the Daily Caller. State finds 30 deleted emails on Benghazi. The Daily Caller's Luke Rosiak reports this week that FBI agents seized smashed computer hard drives from the home of Florida Democrat Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Information Technology Administrator, Pakistani-born Imran Awan, longtime right-hand IT aide to the former Democratic National Committee chairwoman. Awan, who had access to the emails and files of more than a dozen House Democrats, the number I've heard is as many as 150, possibly even more, had desperately tried to get back the smashed hard drives that were seized by the FBI, which contained sensitive information about the 2016 Democratic primary, the general election, as well as interactions with Hillary Clinton during his time as Secretary of State, including the 2012 attack in Benghazi, according to the Daily Caller News Foundation's investigative group. And these guys are quite good. A high-level congressional source speaking on condition of anonymity because of the sensitivity of the probe confirmed that the FBI has joined what Politico previously described as a Capitol Police criminal probe into serious, potentially illegal violations on the House IT network by Imran and three of his relatives who had access to the emails and files of the more than two dozen House Democrats who employed them on a part-time basis. Retired Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Schaefer said Thursday on Tucker Carlson Tonight that there is now evidence that then-Democrat National Chairman and current Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz used Imran Awan for malevolent activities and manipulative things against Bernie Sanders in the 2016 Democrat primary race. Schaefer talked about Awan's other brothers who worked on Capitol Hill, family members fleeing the country to Pakistan, and he got paid three times the average congressional IT employee. In fact, by one calculation, over several years, they together accumulate over $5 million for being in an IT job that would normally pay maybe 40 to 60 max. Fox News reported on bank fraud by one of the brothers, how he double-billed the House of Representatives and the possibility of putting sensitive House information on the cloud and potentially exposing it to outside sources. A federal judge in May ordered the State Department to release another batch of emails from Hillary Clinton's private server related to the 2012 terror attack on the U.S. diplomatic compound in Benghazi, according to Judicial Watch. 30 emails that had been previously wiped off the face of the earth were recovered. Unfortunately for Hillary, they were related to Benghazi, but she knew that, didn't she? FBI investigators recovered 30 emails from Hillary Clinton's wipe server, which discussed Benghazi, government lawyers said in federal court. The disclosure was made during a hearing before U.S. District Court Judge Amit Mehta in a case involving a lawsuit filed by the Judicial Watchdog Group, Judicial Watch. They are good. They are good. Larry Klayman, in my opinion, is one of the most heroic Americans with the greatest integrity around. Now, these stories I'm telling you are rather sensational. From Judge Napolitano, Roger Stone, we've even got the photograph that he had all this access, 30 deleted emails. You're not hearing that right now on the networks or on the cable news. I watch NBC as a baseline so I can see how the news is being spun. They're still talking about the conversation in the office in Trump Tower with a Russian lawyer who in fact had no connection to the Kremlin, going on the email written by this guy who's in some kind of music or entertainment promotion that was claiming she was there on behalf of the Russian government and that she had dirt on Hillary as part of the Russian government's support for them, which the media is endlessly repeating, but it didn't come from the Trump people. This was a setup so they could be giving you the endless news droning on over and over again. Now they're talking about whether the Donald had anything to do with a statement by Donald Jr. about the event. I mean, these are very upright people in my judgment. Eric, Donald, Ivanka. I mean, I'm telling you, they seem to me to be very principled. That's my take. But the media is endlessly corrupt. The DNC overwhelming. Here's a wonderful piece entitled "The Pakistani Hackers Working for the DNC" by Roger Kimball. At last, I am in a position to help the New York Times. It's a good feeling. As anyone who has stumbled upon their website knows, our former paper of record, underscoring its insatiable appetite to provide the public with all the news that fits its agenda, prominently features a solicitation for hot tips. Got a confidential news tip, it asks? Click and amaze the world. Last week, Awan was nabbed by the FBI at Dulles Airport to flee to Pakistan. His wife had already flown the coop for Lahore in March, taking 12,400 with her. The poor thing forgot to read the fine print. You see in all those travel advisories that it's a felony to transport more than 10,000 in currency without reporting it. Sunday is a big day of the week for the New York Times. Were you, or per impossible, I, the editor of The Gray Lady, this story would have occupied a prominent place on the front page of Sunday's edition. And sure enough, there it was above the fold. Oh, wait, I was mistaken. It was not Debbie Wasserman Schultz after all. Silly mistake. It was actually an African herder surrounded by a bunch of goats. Also above the fold was a rare Times story lambasting Donald Trump about Wasserman Schultz and the Awan scandal. Lambasting Donald Trump about Debbie Wasserman Schultz and the Awan scandal, there was precisely nothing. Not that the Times has totally ignored the story. On Thursday, the paper ran an deflationary column with the headline, "Trump Fuels Intrigue Surrounding a Former IT Worker's Arrest." Isn't English wonderful? Trump Fuels Intrigue is almost neutral sounding, almost. But what does it mean to your average Times reader? Trump fuels? Huh, forget about it. Nothing to see here. Move along. Savor the opening. For months, conservative new outlets have built a case against Imran Awan, his wife, two brothers, and a friend, piece by piece. To hear some commentators tell it, with the help of his family and a cushy job on Capitol Hill, Mr. Awan, a Pakistani-American, had managed to steal computer hardware, congressional data, and even just maybe a trove of internal Democrat National Committee emails that eventually surfaced last summer on WikiLeaks. It helped that the story seemed to involve, if only tangentially, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the Florida congresswoman who is the former chair of the committee and an ally of Hillary Clinton. I add the full the boldface, if only tangentially, to highlight the tilt. Further along in the story, the Times go full bromide. Few, if any, of the fundamental facts of the case have come into focus. The criminal complaint against Mr. Awan filed on Monday alleges that he and his wife conspired to secure a fraudulent loan not to commit espionage or political hijinks. Political hijinks, eh? Cute. I think that qualifies as an example of, wait for it. Oh, this is flucinohiplification, meaning the action or habit of estimating something as worthless. Neither espionage nor hijinks, really, nothing but the usual noxious pablum served up by conservative news outlets trading in fuzzy fundamental facts. Right. Yesterday at National Review, Andrew C. McCarthy laid out the case with his usual thoroughness and precision. McCarthy is a former federal prosecutor who put the blind sheik, the chap responsible for the first World Trade Center bombing, behind bars. A fact I mentioned lest you think it was just another knuckle-dragging right-wing Neanderthal whom you can ignore with impunity. Over the years, Awan and his sisters and his cousins and his aunts, apologies to Willie Gilbert, have also raked in some $5 million from the taxpayers for their expert IT services to various Democratic congressmen. Most fired him back in February and March after those conservative news outlets started noting that the House Security Services reported that Awan and company were under criminal investigation. Debbie Wasserman Schultz finally fired Awan last Tuesday, the day after the FBI fingered him at Dulles Airport. What took her so long? Well, you might ask. McCarthy cuts to the chase. This is not about bank fraud. The Awan family swindles are plentiful, but they are just window dressing. This appears to be a real conspiracy aimed at undermining American national security. Wait a minute while I get my plot thickener. In 2016, Democrats on the House Intelligence Committee wrote to the House Appropriations Subcommittee asking that their staffers obtain top secret, sensitive, compartmented information clearances, spook speak for the whole shebang. Guess who was working for many of the letter writers? Yep, Ed Wan and his crew. Guess who the ranking member of the Appropriation Committee was? Donald Duck? Closed. Actually, it was Debbie Wasserman Schultz. It's too early to be making Christmas lists, I know, but here's something I would really like. The stolen laptop that was found in the Rayburn House office building that apparently belongs to Wasserman Schultz, but that A1 was using. The Congresswoman really wants that back and has even threatened the Capitol Hill police with consequences if it is not returned to her F-tunes and right speedily. How do we explain all of this? How do we explain the smashed hard drives that were recovered from the A1's former home last week? I think Mark Stein is right to invoke Occam's razor. One should not multiply entities without necessity. We can leave hijinks to one side. Why, Stern asked, did Debbie Wasserman Schultz not do as her fellow congressman did and dump the A1 clan as no longer politically convenient back in February? Answer, because she was head of the DNC and thus A1 knew too much for her to cut him loose. There's also a story circulating about the possibility they may have been engaged in an affair. But that's clearly secondary. How much did he know? Stein reports that A1 had the password to her iPad and other access codes. Some commentators have been going on for months about possible collusion between the Trump administration and the Russians. So far as I can see, that lengthy investigation has turned up nothing, but nothing of significance there. But how about the case of A1? McCarthy ends his piece with some disquieting observations. They had the opportunity to acquire communications and other information it could provide, prove embarrassing or worse, especially for the polls who hire them. We'll be right back. Before I bring in Dennis, I want to go through two more stories. They're rather short, but they illustrate exactly what we're up against with the mainstream media, which has turned into nothing but an instrument of disinformation and propaganda 24/7. Here's the first. With repeal off the table, media suddenly discover that Obamacare is in deep trouble. Healthcare, now they tell us, after spending months pumping out stories about how great Obamacare is, the news media are now admitting that, lo and behold, Obamacare is unsustainable. What's changed? On Saturday, the New York Times ran a big story that began this way. Republicans have failed to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. Now, can it be repaired? Another Times article from a few months back quoted Gary Claxton, a vice president of the Kaiser Family Foundation, saying that things are getting better. In fact, we were told that the only reason the Obamacare markets were struggling now was because Republican repeal threats were creating uncertainty. Now the Times is telling readers that even people who rely on its coverage agree that it still has big problems. Reuters, meanwhile, published a story the day after the Senate repeal votes failed, reporting that hundreds of U.S. counties are at risk of losing access to private health coverage in 2018 as insurers consider pulling out of those markets in the coming months. This information has been widely available for months, but was apparently of no interest to Reuters before the repeal effort collapsed. Reuters also quotes a Kaiser official warning about how the number of counties with no insurance could, quote, easily grow significantly if a couple major insurers decide to exit. If everything was getting better, as Kaiser previously was saying, why would any insurers be thinking about exiting? CNN Money waited until Saturday to quote Marilyn Travener, who is Obamacare's creator in the Obama administration, now heads the insurance industry lobby, saying the status quo is not sustainable. Wasn't that a big lie when Republicans were saying the same thing just a few days ago? Go figure. Why are these Obamacare is in peril stories appearing now and not while repeal was being considered, when such information might have informed the debate? For one simple reason. Publishing stories suggesting that Obamacare is unsustainable would have been seen by reporters and their editors as, gasp, helping Republicans. That's a cardinal sin for any mainstream news outlet. Now, with repeal apparently off the table, it's safe to talk about Obamacare's warts, because Democrats are now eager to talk about fixing Obamacare with, well, more Obamacare. It's a crass display of how today's agenda-driven news media does a huge disservice to the public. And it cites an article here. It's linked to Murkowski and McCain saved Obamacare just months after promising voters they'd repeal it. Here's another story that'll get the idea across. Why no media response in Barry Satoro's $400 million in offshore accounts? With the naming of Obamacare, a little-known piece of legislation was tucked in stating that expenses and royalties associated with naming the bill would be paid out. Until it was renamed the Affordable Care Act, these royalties and expenses totaled $411 million. And guess who they were paid to? It is an inarguable fact that former President Barack Obama has been known in his life as Barry Satoro. This stems from the time he moved to Indonesia with his mother's second husband, Lolo Satoro. Barack was enrolled in school under this name and continued to use it for some time upon his return to the United States at the age of 10. Of the monies paid for royalties and expenses, it seems, $400 million was transferred discreetly to accounts offshore to Barry Satoro LLC, a legal entity operating out three foreign countries. The accounts have funds in the Cayman Islands, Caledonia, and Ireland. What this means is that it is not paying tax in the U.S. It works out to around $170 million not in the public coffers. The first point is this. Why on earth should a sitting president be able to claim over $400 million for naming a bill after himself? And of course, what does this money actually come from? A more paranoid person would make the assumption that Obamacare was built to fail and last just long enough for a sizable chunk of American money to be paid out. If this were just a plain and simple law that applies all the time, why doesn't every president name bills after themselves? Trump wall at or Reagan's Iron Curtain removal policy. It's not regular and could in fact be the very reason that Obamacare was pushed through without a proper reading. The second point is about why the mainstream media are letting this slide. Of course, we know that the media are biased toward the progressive agenda, but this story is so huge, you'd think at least one mainstream journalist would put it out there. But no, it remains in the dark recesses of our little world. Consider this. If Donald Trump made a single dollar in profit from one of his ventures and didn't pay the appropriate taxes on it, how many hours of headlines and moral dissections would flood our screens? This is worse than hypocrisy. This is borderline criminal. The third point is a little more speculative. What is the money being used for? $400 million is a lot of money. It is almost impossible for Obama to bring it back into the country as petty cash and start spending without some kind of scandal. Some of it will doubtless be washed through the Obama Foundation. But what is the money earmarked for? I would suggest that Obama was schooled in how to set up this bill to receive the money and move it to offshore accounts, all with the intention of using it to further an agenda backed by leading globalists, Soros, and others. This money will be used to actively work against democratic principles and control the political future of America and other nations for decades to come. They are using your money to enslave you. It's as simple as that. Not a peep from the mainstream media. Dennis, it's a great pleasure to have you back on the air. You made a very favorable impression. I wanted to have you back.
Well, thank you. I wish I had more to bring to the plate here for grist for the mill. The only thing I could turn up was an article on WorldNet Daily about cops bailing out from meeting on the Seth Rich and Russia probes.
Well, I can get I can give you content for your contemplation. Here's an important article by a guy who's a Green Beret military expert. War is right around the corner. Russia mobilizes three motorized rifle division strike forces in preparation for rapid offensive assault on Ukraine. He goes by the pen name Jeremiah Johnson. As I wrote in the beginning of the year, the first 6 months in office make or break a president by setting the tempo for the remainder of his term. The president has not been effective in any area, and he has pulled a complete 180-degree shift in dealing with Russia. After they met in the G20 summit, relations with the president, Vladimir Putin, have steadily declined. Now we have a Congress who has long desired to go to war with Russia and a president who is ineffective at every turn. Obamacare will not be repealed. The border fence is a fiasco. And the Democrats, aided by the pseudo-Republicans, are doing a rope-a-dope on the president. They're bouncing off the actions he takes akin to Ali on the ropes and making continuous counterattacks of their own. Domestically, the president has not lost control because he never had it. And now the shadow government that's hidden behind the pseudo-Congress and the moneyed interests that supported are pushing the United States into a war with Russia. Despite initial concern that Trump's sympathies for Russian President Vladimir Putin could compromise the U.S. position on Ukraine, there's been virtually no change in Washington's approach to Kiev since the administration came into office. Members of Trump's Republican Party, historically in favor of using more kinetic combat means to neuter any expansive visions the Kremlin may have, are rallying around a call for a more hardline policy. Vladimir Putin's violent campaign to destabilize and dismember the sovereign nation of Ukraine will not stop unless and until he meets a strong and determined response, McCain, chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, told Trump in February. So the envoy to Ukraine, by name of Volker, is labeling anti-tank and anti-armor weaponry as defensive to take out tanks and denying any provocative actions on the part of Ukraine or for the U.S. government to supply it. Russia already informed the U.S., then Obama government, that any arms sent to Ukraine would be considered an act of war. The IMF-NATO hegemony really want to kick things off badly in eastern Ukraine. That'll be the excuse to go to war with Russia, a nation that believes in a first strike as a deterrence and believes in a first strike to be a defensive measure. The problem is the United States is provoking Russia into a response. The military equipment was already signed off to be delivered to the Kiev government last year by Congress for use against the separatist rebels in the eastern provinces to be delivered this year. Here's a final couple of paragraphs here. Pretty serious. Three motorized rifle division tasked and trained for performing rapid strike offensive operations that the Russians have marshaled. Look at what's going on in the region for a taste of what is to come. The hotspots I previously focused upon in other articles about Ukraine, North Korea, and Syria. The bottom line is here that although the reins of power are in someone else's hands beside Obama, the establishment is the real power behind the throne, with examples of McCain formerly and his protege Volker. That establishment is marching on with their own globalist agenda. Domestically, the country is still trying to shake the ring of Obamacare out of its nose, and this has been unsuccessful. Attentions are focused upon this while the U.S. is being pushed into a war with Russia, this time with the aid of President Trump, who agrees with the sanctions on Russia and the arming of Ukraine for defensive purposes. The war is right around the corner, and the government is fostering it. When the bombs start to fall, they'll all be safe in their taxpayer-sponsored shelters, as the stultified herd is called once and for all. Dennis.
Well, there was once a time, as you might be aware, probably even as early as maybe a year ago, I had a rather flawed vision of what Vladimir Putin was. And to go back to even some of the things I thought about today, just to speak to that issue, I spent an awful lot of time poo-pooing issues like when he murdered Alexander Litvinenko with a polonium 210 put into his tea, and other nice things that Vladimir has done. And there's an awful lot of information that seems to be putting the United States and Russia at loggerheads, at least in the news. And what I think this is all about is that, for lack of a better analogy, when the Cold War ended, when the Berlin Wall fell, and effectively Russia fully collapsed, or the Soviet Union collapsed, rather, and turned into, you know, the various states of the, what used to be the Soviet Union, there was an awful lot of money being spent by the United States government to counter what the guys like me in the military, who served for a number of years, were being told on a daily basis, that if we weren't vigilant in our war games that we held almost on a daily basis, that the Russians would whip our tail, and that we'd be sent to the bottom because they hated us, wanted to blow us up. Well, after, you know, coming out of the ether and deciding that that probably wasn't really true, a lot of people that I had met that migrated out of Russia, that I had conversations with in the aftermath of my military service, convinced me that virtually all the Russians for the most part, had absolutely no built-in animosity and hatred of America. And it would take an awful lot of anti-American sentiment across the whole board in Russia to get even the military fully on board with any kind of a first strike or a nuclear strike against the United States, which would be, at the bare minimum, a huge mess, potentially even altering the global climate for a number of decades in a direction that we can't afford. So if I look at what happened in the collapse of the former Soviet Union and the doldrums of the military-industrial complex, suddenly having no common enemy to whip up the frothy hatred of the jingoistic, stupid Americans to want to polarize and hate these guys in Russia, it looked like it took an awful long time for finally, after many, many years, decades actually, for them to come up with a plan to reignite and resurge the whole entire Cold War. And I submit to you that the vast amount of what we're seeing right now is a resurgence of the Cold War. You know, and I'm not saying that it could break out into a hot war. It's entirely possible. But I might remind you what we talked about in the one show not too very long ago, where we had a discussion, and I said that the fundamental reason why I had a hard time with Russia wanting to go to a hot war scenario with the United States is that would suddenly, unequivocally stop all the profit-taking, probably for a lot of people, except the bankers that might be supporting it. Now, as much as we might want to believe that the Rothschilds would love to start another war, which I think is probably something they'd love to do if they could limit it, I don't think that they really want to light the powder keg to lead to something that they have no control over. And therefore, limiting all the shekel grubbing that they could do and all the money that might be roped in by all the war machinery being put into play, because suddenly, without warning, the whole entire planet's involved in something in the aftermath of probably a limited thermonuclear exchange followed by a protracted war conventionally on many continents. So what I think is going on here, and the best analysis that I can come up with, is I think that there's an awful lot of game playing being done by Vladimir Putin and by the powers that be in our military-industrial complex, example given, the Pentagon. Basically, the Pentagon, as you might be aware, is basically a government of its own. It doesn't rely on anything being handed down to it from edicts by politicians. It doesn't really care whether they vote for the money or not, because routinely over the last couple of years we've been told time after time after time that they've failed to account every couple of years for as much as $2.3 trillion in funds that disappeared without any possible way of knowing where it went. Well, if they can get, you know, make that kind of money go away, you can rest assured that there's no way in hell that they're going to turn off the money tap that keeps mm-hmm. them alive, and them being the families that support them. So I'm not trying to say that you're wrong, because I don't think that's really appropriate. What I am trying to say is that this is, for all practical purposes, this is Cold War 2.0 improved being foisted on everyone.
Dennis, let me supplement that with another point of view, namely that of Ron Paul. This is a wonderful short piece. Let me read it, and then you can comment. North Korea or Iran, where will President Trump attack first? President Trump seems to be impatiently racing toward at least one disastrous war, maybe two. The big question is, who will be first, North Korea or Iran? Over the past several days, President Trump has sent two nuclear-capable B-1 bombers over the Korean Peninsula to send a clear message that he is ready to attack North Korea. On Saturday, he blamed China for North Korea's refusal to cease its missile tests. He tweeted, quote, "I'm very disappointed in China. They do nothing for us with North Korea, just talk. We will no longer allow this to continue." One press report from an unnamed Pentagon source claimed that President Trump, quote, "is to order a military strike against North Korea within a year after this weekend's North Korean test of a longer-range missile." Iran, which along with North Korea and Russia will face new sanctions imposed by Congress and expected to be signed into law by Trump, is also in President Trump's crosshairs. He was reportedly furious over his Secretary of State Rex Tillerson certifying that Iran was in compliance with a nuclear deal, even though Iran was in compliance, and he seems determined to push a confrontation. Twice in the past week, the U.S. military has fired at Iranian ships in the Persian Gulf. On Tuesday, an Iranian military ship in the Persian Gulf was warned off by machine gun blasts from a U.S. Navy vessel. Then on Friday, the U.S. Navy fired warning flares toward another Iranian ship operating in the Persian Gulf. Imagine if the U.S. Navy had encountered Iranian warships in the Gulf of Mexico, firing machine guns at them when they approached the Iranians. Facing new sanctions, the Iranian government announced that it will not end ballistic missile testing, even under U.S. pressure. The missile program is not a violation of the P5+1 Iranian deal unless it's specifically designed to carry nuclear weapons. So whom will Trump attack first? Let's hope nobody, with continuing pressure from both Democrats and Republicans over the unproven Russiagate allegations. It increasingly looks like he will seek relief by starting a nice little war. If he does so, however, his presidency will likely be over and he may end up blundering into a much bigger war in the process. Although Trump's bombastic rhetoric on Iran and North Korea has been pretty consistent, the American people voted Trump because he was seen as the less likely of the two candidates to get the U.S. into a major war. A recent study by the Boston University and University of Minnesota concluded that Trump won the most states in the most votes in parts of the country with the highest military casualties. Those most directly suffering the costs of war were attracted to the candidate they saw as less likely to take the U.S. into another major war. These are the Americans living in the swing states of Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan that surprised the pundits by voting for Trump over Hillary. Will Trump's legacy be blustering us into one or two wars that will make Iraq and Afghanistan look like cakewalks by comparison? Millions dead? It's time to make our voices known before it's too late. Dennis.
Well, here again, it's, you know, like I said in the one show not too very long ago, that that I found it rather, you know, I took a rather laconic view of this rhetoric that was pointing at an imminent war, strictly because time after time after time, we've been taken to the brink. And this is kind of like a form of tantric sex here, where it just goes on and produces nothing, really. And all it has really done is raise the uncertainty in the global markets. It's basically put any economic recovery into stasis everywhere, on every continent. And if anything, the only people that are going to win anything like more money out of the whole deal are those that understand that if they start a limited war, as in something that will not escalate into a thermonuclear exchange, they could probably get away with it and use it as a diversionary tactic. It would be a very pyrrhic end for the whole entire continent we know as the United States of America here. If we started a war with China by doing brinkmanship that we couldn't turn it off. And I might want to submit right now that just recently, North Korea has failed with their latest test. In other words, their bottle rocketry blew up again, you know, in a rather spectacular failure, in the sense that it was a very unreal demonstration that they're no more confident in being able to hit anything with an ICBM than some kid firing, a rocket in his backyard. So I'm not trying to minimize it down to zero, but if they want to start a war with somebody, they might want to pick on somebody that is a little bit more credible than North Korea. And like I said, there's a very good chance that if we did foment a war with by attacking North Korea and bombing it in any way, make, or form, that the wild card here are the Chinese. And the only thing that I think that might stop that is that there was a recent statement by Christine Lagarde of the International MOFOs, as I call them, all International Monetary Fund, it said that they were going to try and start up in China, which effectively co-opts the whole entire Chinese regime and turns them into another lapdog and a Rothschild. So that would be the only saving grace for being able to taunt an adversary that absolutely says, oh, wait a minute, I want to make profit over war. So I really have a big problem with this brinkmanship thing panning out into a hot war, strictly because, first off, Trump has no power. Let's get that straight once and for all. All of these things we attribute to him are done by people other than him. He might make bellicose statements with his tweets, and he might look like an ignoramus when you see him on television. But by every account that I can tell, he's no more in charge of the U.S. military than Howdy Doody's in charge of it. Everything that's going on, including the false flag stuff, obviously, he's being run by the Central Intelligence Agency. Absolutely no control of Trump of any way, make, or form. is going on. And I don't think that ultimately that it's in anybody's best interest to pull one where we bomb the hell out of North Korea and draw China into some kind of a problem whereupon they have to launch a massive nuclear strike against us. By the way, they would destroy us in the first strike.
Dennis, stand by. We're about to come to the break. I want to mention to everyone, those who are following my work, Gus Chambers has a new channel. It's a Gus Chambers channel. American Nightmare was struck down by YouTube. Too many of my videos and shows there. You want to pursue Gus Chambers' channel to track down the shows you previously found at American Nightmare. He's doing diligent work. Stand by. Dennis and I will be right back. Call in any questions you may have for him, for me. It's completely open. The number is 717-300-1698. We'll be right back. This is Jim Fetzer, your host, where my featured guest this evening is Dennis Camino. We have a couple callers standing by already. Let's begin with Brian in Minnesota. Brian, you're on with Dennis and me.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay, my question here is, who is running the United States right now? I mean, I'm hearing from some people that there's different factions. I'm hearing some people are saying it's deep state. I mean, who is running the United States? And if you could answer that question, that'd be great. My second question is do if your assertion that it's not Congress or it's not the official leaders, if that's your assertion, do other foreign leaders know that? Because I was watching an interview the other day with Vladimir Putin, and in the interview, he said something about him having some belief that it's not the actual elected officials, that it's some group of people. So those are my two questions.
Let me make a preliminary, and then I'll turn it over to Dennis and come back after he remarks. I mean, it's obvious to Putin that Trump isn't running the government. Trump wanted to improve relations with Russia. Trump wanted to end the wars in the Middle East. He wanted to enforce the borders. He did get us out of the TPP, but look how much he's been constrained by Congress and other events. He's obviously not in control. And I think that's very disturbing to Putin, as it's very disturbing to me. And while Dennis has a rather dim view of Vladimir, I admire him beyond words. He is the only statesman astride the world stage today. In my opinion, he's the only reason why we aren't already engaged in nuclear war. That said, I invite Dennis to address your questions. Dennis.
Thank you very much for coming on tonight. I appreciate your questions. I hope I can answer them in a short fashion without that going on and on. But the United States suffered a coup from which it never recovered on November 22nd, 1963. And we have had Central Intelligence Agency control of the United States since then, and it is ongoing today. In other words, the people inside the Beltway that work in the Capitol and in the Congress and the Senate have no control, but they're basically just a show, as is the judiciary, that we actually have a government when we don't. And the control has been with Central Intelligence Agency all through these years, 55 years or more, 56 years, and it hasn't been rescinded. In other words, there's been absolutely no wresting of that control back. So that's the answer to question number one, and I submit to you that the reason that this stuff is going on with Putin and you know, like I said, Jim and I differ greatly about our opinions, but effectively what we have is people that can't possibly, you know, wage war when they're both on the same side. Central Intelligence Agency is run by Rothschild, as do most of the other intelligence communities within all of the so-called free nations that we call them, but they're not. And because Rothschild control virtually everything now except China, and they're trying to get a toehold in it, there would be no advantage to having arch-Zionist Vladimir Putin, who is in fact a Jewish man, born of a Jewish mother, wage war against the United States of America, which is controlled by, the Rothschild through the Central Intelligence Agency. So to put that whole thing to bed, I'm not trying to say that the threat of a nuclear war between Russia and the United States is non-existent. I'm saying that the only way it could possibly occur is by accident, and not to say that that isn't possible, because during my service, we underwent at least one episode where all of us were put on worldwide alert one day in 1973 because of a threat that was perceived by the Pentagon that we were about ready to go to war, and everybody was told to return to base immediately. Now, any time that you would suspect that the United States is going to foment an attack against another country, be it North Korea or whoever, for the first part, what you'd see is a massive amount of troop mobilization, hardware being moved, huge numbers of military flights, the influx of those increasing on a daily basis around military hubs and centers for logistics. All of that stuff would be occurring, and we're seeing none of it with this thing with North Korea. So anyway, I'm going to turn it back over to Jim, but thank you very, very much for your call. It's greatly appreciated. We do enjoy the fact that we have so many intelligent people actually coming into our call center.
Brian, is there any more you'd like to
ask?
Yeah.
Yeah. My other question was, what is the nature of the relationship between Russia and Israel? Because Russia is selling these sophisticated weapons to Iran, which is a enemy of the state of Israel, and then he has good relationships with the state of Israel. So I'm kind of wondering, like, what is the nature? What is their relationship?
Let me take a stab at that, and then let Dennis add his further reflections. It seems to me we have an emerging alliance between Russia, China, and Iran. It's going to bring great stability to the world. Israel is alarmed by this. Israel has designs on Syria, has enlisted the assistance of the United States to take out the democratically elected government of Syria. The Syrian people adore Assad. And this is one of the reasons it's so simply absurd when you have people like Rachel Maddow, Chris Matthews, Lawrence O'Donnell attacking Trump for non-existent collusion with Russia and interfering with our election. We're not just interfering in their election. We're destabilizing their whole democratically elected governments. We did it in Iran back in 1953. We did it in Ukraine just a few years ago. Now we're attempting to do it again in Syria. It's completely disgusting. I see the Russians and the Chinese and the Iranians on the side of peace and justice, frankly. An observation was made recently by the Saker, who's a brilliant student of international affairs, that the Russians fear war, whereas Americans are careless about it, but that the Russians are prepared for war and that the Americans are not. And I think he hit some pretty big nails right on the head with those observations. Dennis.
Well, I think that, I got to agree with basically everything that the Saker put out there about Russia. But I want to remind you that the man that right now currently is in charge of Russia is Vladimir Putin. And Vladimir Putin, as I have said, was born of a Jewish mother, and he's married to a Jewish woman himself. He has passed a law recently in not so many distant months where he has made it an imprisonable offense if anybody in the whole entire country of Russia makes statements that deny that the Holocaust ever occurred. Now, this puzzled me for a great deal of time until I really started to look at his background, because that seemed like a ludicrous thing for a statesman to do if he was really on the up and up, but to protect Zionists wherever they may be. Now, the other thing that's unknown by most Americans is that all of the deputies in cabinet positions in Russia are all Zionist Jews. And that's not by coincidence. That's just not by accident. For him to have so many Jews in charge and so many high positions within the government of Russia itself. Now, there's been a great deal of talk about him having arrest warrants for agents of the Rothschilds and oligarchs that ripped off Russia during the collapse period and stuff like that. But if you really, really look at Vladimir Putin's past, he is first and foremost a KGB asset. And if you want to talk about KGB, you got to go all the way back to when Russia was in the throes of its own internal struggle during what was basically a bankster-fomented revolution. It cost them more than 60 million lives, predominantly by Zionist Jews that effectively infected their country. So if you look at Vladimir Putin and hold out any hopes that that he's in it for anything but to make money, I think you're going to be badly disappointed in the outcome in the long run. And therefore, he is a good piece of I'd have to say, a chess piece in the detente position, because he no more than anybody else wants to really start a war where it stops all the profit-taking. However, he will facilitate the arms trade. It only ratchets up the international tension to the point where, instead of spending money on education and medical care, all these countries that are so wigged out and frightened about a war are going to piss away more and more of their GDP, buying more and more weapons of death that we don't need, because we don't really need to have a war. The only reason that they would need to foment one today is if the Rothschilds ended up being lynched outside of London and all of their followers ended up fearing for their lives, and I could see them wanting to burn it all down rather than hand it over to us. But I think that we're in very safe hands with guys like Putin, who basically is a controlled opposition, which is artificial. So I have about as much fear of Russia going to war with the United States as I have fear of the guy across the street coming over here and hacking me to death with a dull kitchen knife. So I'm not trying to say that the threat of war is zero. I'm just trying to say that the only way that we could end up with a thermonuclear war between the United States and China and the United States and Russia is if somebody seriously made a big mistake and triggered it by accident and caused a launching that nobody could stop. And then, therefore, I could submit to you that we would have, at the bare minimum, probably 60 million lives lost in the United States and quite a few million in Russia just by accident. Because machines make mistakes, human beings make bad judgment calls, that you can sleep tight and with a great deal of rest every single night, knowing that Vladimir Putin, the controlled opposition, is in charge of the so-called enemy state that everybody's polarizing us about here. I have no fear of him. I detest him for what he really is, because he is a Bolshevik right down to the very bone marrow. It took me a great deal of time to figure that out, but by far and by large, we have no fear, and we should have no fear of a global thermonuclear war unless it were started by accident. And I don't think that all the profit-taking that the Rothschilds are doing wants to be ended by something as stupid as a war where at least a third of the population gets killed.
Brian, obviously, Dennis and I have divergent views here. I look at domestic politics. I look at the way Congress, which is dominated by the American-Israeli Political Action Committee, is hamstringing Trump at every opportunity, that they're seeking to promote a war between the United States and Russia. And I say Dennis is being entirely too sanguine. Israel would like nothing better than for the U.S. and Russia to go to war. In my opinion, they're behind all the efforts to promote it. They've undertaken all kinds of skullduggery. They're the foremost champions of false flag attacks in the world. And I'm terribly, terribly disturbed when you have, like, the New York Times expending so much time on utter propaganda, complete palpable crap, to demonize and trash Trump, which indicates that there are powerful forces here that fear the man as president of the United States. I want to thank you for calling in, Brian. We'll take our next caller, Paul, in California. Paul, you're on with Dennis and me.
Well, I got to tell you, Jim, I agree with Dennis. And this is probably the first time I think I've ever listened to a show where the point that I was going to make, or the things that I was going to say, were exactly echoed right before I called. Because the main thing that I was going to contribute was the fact that I'm not going to go out on a limb here and say that we're not going to have any kind of major war with Russia. It's all theater. And by the way, Dennis, well done. In fact, to my reckoning, the only legitimate, well-known website that has been covering the reality of Putin is Renegade Tribune and Renegade Broadcasting. There may be a few strays here and there, but they've always been out in front about this. I mean, anybody that passes laws that says you got to go to prison because you say something, or you say something about the Holocaust, or even now with the supposed law that you're going to be opposed to Israel and you're going to be in favor of sanctions against Israel because of their policy towards the Palestinians, you know, they're now saying that that's going to be an imprisonable offense in the U.S. In answer to Brian's question, I got to admit, when he first asked it, I had to chuckle a little bit, but then I quickly thought, well, it's not really funny, because most people have no clue about what's going on. The callers to this show are the exception, I would imagine, but you know, who is in control is who issues the money and who tells us that we owe them. And, you know, there's just times where you got to, as somebody, and I'm sure you both know about the creation of money out of nothing and, you know, putting it into circulation as debt and saying that we owe full face value plus interest, that's got to just have you pulling your hair out at times. It's so insane. Something I've been doing for years to some effect is I pull currency out of my pocket, $5, $10, $20 bill, whatever, and I show it to somebody and I ask them, okay, the people that are providing this to us, do we really need them? I mean, it's the worst deal you could possibly think of. If they were a vendor and we were shopping their services, you know, we'd show them the door immediately. And historically, what have they been known for, right? I mean, it's not like there's no history on these people. You know, they're not miners and farmers and builders and tradesmen and craftsmen. They don't contribute anything. They're known for what? For stealing and deceiving and lying. And this whole thing about Russia, in my opinion, is just theater. And on a lighter note, if there is one, is there's quite a few people that blog and post about how great Ukraine is. There's quite a few Americans that are making their home there. And they talk about how beautiful it is and how lovely the people are and the food is great and how free it is and how cheap it is to live there. You know, I find it quite interesting. I'm going to mention a guy's site here, johnhenryhill.wordpress.com. I just recently discovered this. He is one of these American expats who has a couple of different homes, actually, and one of them is there. And this is an excellent site I heard on Stormfront the other day. Somebody called in. johnhenryhill.wordpress.com. And brilliant guy. And all I can say is when you look at the fact of what World War II, when we go back there, America doesn't pick on anybody its own size ever. So that's why we're not going to have a war with Russia. That's the other take on it. I mean, when you look back and you see, you know, we make a big deal about how we landed in Normandy and we fought the Germans. We faced, according to what I've heard and read in history, we faced approximately 9 German divisions. The Russians faced 200 German divisions. So in my opinion, you can just, you know, keep going down the list of all the countries we fought since the war, and it's pathetic. We're like the big bully that picks on little children who can't defend themselves. And that's the end of my little rant for there. Hope you enjoyed
it. Nice comments. Dennis, you want to respond, Paul?
I got to say that that's a great summary, and if I could put it any better, I'd like to, but I absolutely can't best that. That's the best rap I think I've seen in a radio show, probably bar none. Thank you very much for your call.
Very successful, Paul. Thanks so much for calling in. I look forward to future calls from you. We have another caller, Peter in Florida. Peter, you're on the air with Dennis and me.
Can you hear me, gentlemen?
Yep.
Yes, sir.
Yes, this is a deplorable truck driver from Florida. That last caller, I give kudos. That guy is, he's good. You know what? My compliments to that guy. That was brilliant. I'm a blue-collar guy. I got a college degree and all. You know, I've been there, done that. My college degree didn't pay for anything. Let that be a lesson to the millennials. Don't waste your money on a college education. Go out and learn how to lay some block. Work for a living. All right, here we go.
Well, bear in mind, Peter, that a college education has many other benefits than being a trade school form of training, so you don't want to minimize the importance of a college education. Develop your general understanding of the world history, a whole range of subjects you'd otherwise not know, even philosophy and other subjects. So I think you have exaggerated, or let us say, minimized the value of a college education in terms of its practicality, which is probably, in my opinion, its least significant dimension. But go ahead.
Yeah, but Jim, what college are you going to go to learn what's really happened? You know, so that's another topic. Let's not go there, Jim. I love you. You are the greatest out there, Jim. You're my favorite show. Sandy Hook, with their duty on Sandy Hook. Don't let me get off topic here, please. I have 2 points to make.
Go.
All right. The first one is, we are on the 50th anniversary of the attack on the U.S. Liberty.
Yeah.
That's my first point. When Israel declared war on us, they did it long before that. Okay? That's my first point. And I'm really mad tonight. And I'm a guy with a sense of humor. And I try to throw... This is so ridiculous that we should have our own alternative right independent media, Saturday Night Live. This is beyond ridiculous where we are now. With Wasserman, Schultz, and the Yuan brothers, why they try to shove Russian collusion down our throat. It's beyond ridiculous.
Okay, Peter, we're going to be interrupted by the break. I just want to tell you, you got a kindred spirit here. Dennis has spent a lot of time driving trucks himself, so we got about a minute before. So keep going. We want to keep you over the break. Just go ahead.
I would love it to keep me over.
Yeah, but same we are. Go ahead.
Another point was the sanctions against Russia, Iran, China, was it? Whatever. I want to know, somebody over the break, find out why, what reasons that we can justify the sanctions. I don't even know what they're for. Tell me what they're for. Why are we sanctioning these countries? Are we at the break? Can I keep going?
Yeah, keep going. You got about a minute. But I will just partially answer. The sanctions are totally political. They have no basis in fact. The staggering votes, you had only two dissenters, Ron Paul and Bernie Sanders, from the sanctions on North Korea, Iran, and Russia. In the House, there were only three, and there are 435 members of the House. Trump has a problem what to do about it. It looks as though it's clear. There's no way around it. And this appears to be part and parcel why Putin is actually... It, from reports I have, preparing for what may be an inevitable conflict, although Paul in California and Dennis are both convinced that we're not going to be going to war with Russia. I wish I were equally sanguine. Say a few more words before... a few more words, well, Peter, before...
Okay, well, that's the question during the break. I mean...
Okay, hold that thought. Hold that thought. We'll be right back.
The Russian hacking the election?
There was no Russian hacking of the election. We'll be right back, Peter. This is Jim Fetzer, your host, with my special guest, Dennis Camino. We'll be right back. With Dennis Camino. Dennis, you want to take a minute to respond to Peter in Florida? We have three other callers standing by, so we don't have a lot of time.
Actually, I just wanted to tell Peter that even though I didn't drive trucks for years, I did my fair share of it for 6 months, long enough to see every state in the United States except Hawaii for obvious reasons, and Maine and Florida driving interstate. And it's a tough job, so my hat's off to you, my friend, if that's what you do for a living. Don't let anybody tell you that it's a dullard's life. You actually have to have your stuff together to do it. But go ahead, Peter. Go ahead.
Well, Peter's only got a second to add more because of three other callers. Peter, make a closing remark or two here.
Yes, sir. I'm a marketing guy. I'm blue collar now, but I'm a marketing guy. I've been in real estate. I've done sales all my life and watched it collapse in California, and I got in a truck. That's my story. Anyway, so in the beginning, I'm a marketing guy, and we got these people. This is my point, Jim, Mr. Fetzer. This is my point tonight. We've got these guys. We got them dead to rights. We got all the evidence, 9/11, pedophilia, I mean, I'm not even going to waste time telling you how much. Debbie Wasserman Schultz now, and the Allman brothers, and the money in the DNC, and Seth Rich. I'm tired of the specifics of the corruption. I'm tired of it.
Peter, you're making impeccable points. The media is a total failure. The media is a waste. The media is corrupt. The media is despicable. The United States is turning to shit because of the media. Thanks for calling in, Peter. I'm real glad you called. Brett, you're on with me and Dennis Camino. Brett.
Good evening, distinguished gentlemen.
Go right ahead.
Okay. I think Dennis mentioned the satanic Babylonian Talmudic Zohar Bolshevik I discovered a website called Holodomor, Holodomor info.com, the Jewish ethnic cleansing of Europeans, three Holodomor genocides. You must understand the leading Bolsheviks who took over Russia were not Russians. They hated Russians. They hated Christians. Driven by their ethnic hatred, they tortured and slaughtered millions of Russians and also, of course, Ukrainians and Romanians without a shred of human remorse. It was an invasion and conquest. More of my countrymen suffered horrific crimes at their bloodstained hands than any people or nation ever in the entirety of human history. It cannot be understated that Talmudic Jewish Bolshevism was the greatest human slaughter of all time.
Brett, I think you made your point. I'm sure Dennis is going to agree with you. Dennis, you want to comment?
Well, I got to tell you that he's absolutely right, and I've studied the slaughter, and they've even made movies and tried to get people to subliminally sign on to the slaughter. If you remember, if you've ever seen G for Vendetta, look at very closely at the symbology in the background, the cross, it's portrayed over and over again, and it's being pushed out there as a form of underneath your skin brain programming to make you hate exactly what you shouldn't be by the Jews that run Hollywood. Now, what happened in Russia is exactly as you stated. By the way, I have Russian blood in my veins. So I am particularly pissed off by the fact that the country was so egregiously destroyed by the Jews, who predominantly taken it over. In other words, they basically run Russia. And the killing wasn't just to shed blood. It was to basically take the turf and take the land. And that's what they've done. And when you have a puppet like Vladimir Putin in charge and all of his cabinet ministers all being Jews, and he passes a law that says you can't say anything about the fake Holocaust, that's got to be clue number one that what's happening right now, and I'm going to summarize this real quick. We're seeing a rapid consolidation of power by the Jews in the fact that they own and control Russia. They own and control the United States. They own and control Britain. They own and control New Zealand. They own and control Canada. They own and control virtually everything around here that has any sizable amount of toilet paper money that they printed on the Rothschild printing presses in all these countries. So the Jews own and control it all except China currently. And I dare have to say that we're in the end game here, where the Jew world order, as I call it, is about really ready to come into full fruition and complete the world domination. They blew it because they convinced us that we had them on the rails. We did not. They've been steadfastly one foot in front of the other, putting this Bolshevik, communist bullshit agenda of Jew domination of the whole entire planet into perfect focus, and I dare say they've almost achieved it now.
Dennis, thanks for that. Yeah, and Brett, thanks for calling in. If you got one real short comment, we got two other callers.
Yeah, I just want to recite the names, Aaron Soltz, Yaakov Rapoport, Lazar Kogan, Matvey Berman, Genrikh Egudah, Nafti Frankel. All of these were the commandants of the gulag that murdered 66 million. And what this guy Solzhenitsyn, whom I was quoting here from his Gulag Archipelago, he states that it is the global media that is consistent with the perpetrators of the gulag. And he's the guy that ID'd these names here that I just recited. And I guess the only way that I approach any kind of recourse on this global communitarian takeover mm-hmm. is the monetary system. Somehow we have to launch an all-out assault on that.
Brett, I think we know the problems with the Federal Reserve. Thank you for calling in. You got a very warm reception from Dennis. Rob in Missouri, you're on with Dennis and me. Rob.
Oh, hi, Jim. How are you doing? How you doing?
Good.
I'm going to have to go with you on this one, Jim. I think that Russia is a real threat, and I got 2 points. One is it's well known and documented. There's over 150 to 250 thousand troops Russia on our border in the Canada side, on the southern side of Texas, up to 1 million Chinese. So I think if they want to, you know, if we are so stupid enough to put a war in with these people, I think we're going to have a rude awakening. And anybody that thinks Russia don't want to come back and take their possessions in China that they've bought into in this country, they're crazy.
I don't know about a million Chinese on our border or Russians in Canada. Dennis, do you have any thoughts about that?
No, I mean, I thank you very much for your comments. And I haven't really seen the stuff, but I'm not throwing it out with the bathwater either. In other words, when a caller comes in and has information that I think needs to be looked at, I absolutely positively will do the research and see what's there. But I would remind you that we've had many, many decades of constant war, with the United States being the big bully, basically being the money laundering operation for the Rothschild Jews, and being that the dominance of the dollar is going away, pretty soon we're going to have somebody else anointed tipped on the shoulder with and told, you're it. And I think that my best estimate is that Russia is being groomed to be the next global reserve currency, and not China, contrary to popular belief. But I do believe that in the near term, you and I and all of us will see a day come when the ruble will be the main currency, and not the renminbi and the other Chinese currencies.
Rob, thanks for calling in. We have another caller, Mike. Mike from. Thank you very much. We have another caller, Mike from New York. Mike, you're on with Dennis and me.
Yeah, good evening, Professor Fetzer and Dennis. Thank you for taking my call, sir. I'm just going to clarify a few statements here. China's totally in the hands of the Jews, and I'm going to send you a copy of this that I'm looking at right now. For example, Israel Epstein hanging out with a young Mao Zedong. Now, a lot of people aren't aware that Mao Zedong is a Yale graduate, because Yale University had a satellite there in China. So he was groomed right from the get-go by these guys. And I'm also looking at a guy named Robert Kuhn, who from Kuhn Low Banking. He was serving Mao Zedong. And then there's Sidney Shapiro, who served in the Politburo, okay, which they
Politburo,
want us to think. Right, they want us to believe, you know, no Westerners in Red China. No, well, Jews are, that's for sure. In fact, now there's another photo. They're throwing him a birthday party, as he's an old fart at this stage in his life. And then there's another photo with Mao with Sidney Rittenberg, who was a spy serving them while representing us here in the West. And then so many others. And I'll send you the photos that verify all of this. And Red China, as they're communists. Who else is communist but the Jews? So naturally, they got the China in their back pocket. And disappointingly, to hear that Russia's still in their back pocket. I always wondered how many Jews were still controlling the Russian country, the government, especially via their central bank, how established was it? Reports I've heard in the past were that they didn't have that much control anymore, but from what I'm hearing now, that may not be true. So that's disappointing if that's true about Russia. And the other thing is that no offense to the Russians, you know, they're tough, that's for sure, but the Nazis lost in Russia not from the Russian soldiers and Stalin's strategy. They lost to the Russian winter just like Napoleon did. Okay, they got dragged in deep, some bad calls by Hitler as always, ticking off his generals. They were really ticked off with some of the calls he made once they penetrated Russia. And then they got trapped in a hard winter like Napoleon, decimated the Nazi troops, decimated divisions. So that's how that turned out. And so last, we can't lose sight of the big picture. The United States has been used post-World War II as the muscle and treasury by the New World Order, one world antichrist establishment, being primarily Jews, to take all the countries in the world under their grip. That's why we've been intruding in all these countries. Not for empire building like they want us to believe, you know, for our superpower status. We have the right, you know, all that crap they fed us. No, it's because we're taking out governments, installing regimes that serve the United Nations one world government strategy. Now we've accomplished all that over the so many decades post-World War II. United States is in the way. We got to go. Hence the major attack on our country, offshoring all our high-tech jobs, like IBM, the leader in the world through up to the 90s in semiconductor R&D and manufacturing. Siemens, Germany, the only competition we had. I was right in on the thick of it, guys, so I know firsthand. And by the time I quit, the offshoring started. By the time of Clinton's second term going into G.W. Bush's term, high-tech jobs were going straight to Red China, as well as some other satellite slave countries, but primarily Red China. So we have been hijacked and they've been undermining our national security in every angle, through manufacturing base, through economics, bleeding us dry with all the foreign aid going all around the world, et cetera, foreign wars, et cetera, welfare, et cetera, on and on. You guys cover all that, but there's the economic attack. So they're breaking us down so we have nothing. When they get the next major war going, whether it's World War or Civil War, they need the whole world now in a state of chaos, right? So they can reconstruct it under this one world government system. Okay. That's what's going on. That's your strategy. Everything is everything occurring is they're making all these events occur as part of their strategy. And then we get the little nuances of the internal political intrigue going on in the meantime.
Mike, I want Dennis to have a chance to comment. Dennis.
Well, you know, I think I've often suspected what you said about China as being the truth, and I don't doubt it for one second. In other words, it makes a tremendous amount of sense, and the reason why it makes a tremendous amount of sense is that this offhand statement that came out of Lagarde's face about a week ago about installing the IMF formally in China, that just didn't come out of the blue, you know, out of nowhere. It was basically the formalization of something that's already been in the works or actually in place for an awful long time, is what I suspect. So what you're effectively telling me, and I have no doubt but to believe it, is that for all practical purposes, it's game over now for Goyim and the rest of the world. I think we've lost, and the reason why we've lost is we always thought we could do these little sneak attacks on radio shows and try and subvert them with telling the truth, but all the way around the board, the money always is the thing that controls everything. And basically, we've been watching them step by step monetize the whole entire planet with the worthless goddamn toilet paper. Pardon my French. And once I had suspected that it was a certainty that China was completely co-opted, which in fact they probably absolutely positively must be, then the only thing left to do now is consolidate all of the power and to keep the people subjugated globally with a low-level series of small wars and tension and fear-mongering, which is precisely what they've been doing for the last 20 years now. So it fits the mold perfectly, and I couldn't thank you more for your contribution tonight. It was a good one.
Mike, thanks for calling in. We got another caller standing by. Frank in North Carolina, you're on with Dennis and me. Frank.
Yeah, thank you. I also, some years ago, listened to a very compelling presentation, basically making the argument that the Jews were in control of China. And there was one catchphrase that I recall from that presentation, and it was the Jewish faces of China. And I know another guy I was listening to one time, basically he had talked to someone who had been over to China on business, and he saw all these people that were not Chinese in this office building. He's like, who are these people? You know, they're not Chinese. He's like, oh, those are the Jews. You know, they're kind of like consulting, you know, consultants or forward advisors, basically telling the Chinese basically how to come in and destroy America. You know, that was my interpretation of it. The other thing I wanted to report, what is it, House Bill or House Resolution, perhaps, 1697, and Senate Bill 720, and people seem to commonly refer to it as BDS, Boycott, Divest, and Sanction. And these two bills are with regards to Israel. You know, people want to boycott policies of the Israeli government, and you know, they're trying to basically make it a felony, you know, to peacefully protest.
The fine is $250,000 up to $1 million, and you could be incarcerated for up to 20 years. That's pretty unbelievable for freedom of speech. And the fact that you have so many members of the House and Senate who don't understand how profound a violation this is of the First Amendment just bewilders me. It shows that we really do have a Congress that's run by AIPAC, that the American people have no representation in Congress. These people are either complete morons or totally under the thumb of the Zionists, and it's obvious which is which. Add another word, Frank.
Well, my report specifically... Not that anyone would care, but it seems to be my cross to bear. I did get into the Alex Jones Show Sunday afternoon. I think I might have been like the second from the last caller. And I brought these two bills, these, you know, joint resolutions, yeah, whatever they are, up. And he cut me off immediately and didn't speak to these bills. He spoke to another bill. So basically, he fooled his audience into believing that the two bills that I named discussed something completely different. He is a shill. I don't know who he's shilling for, but he's a shill. Also, Joyce Riley on the Power Hour, of course, she's recently deceased of cancer, supposedly. This is not about her, but the guy, Daniel Brigman, who's taken over her show, or at least is mainly, he's a primary host, and then you get a woman named Sam. Caller called in the other morning, Monday morning, I believe, and asked, what, you know, how come you never talk about this or that? And he said, well, he basically said, the thing is, if I come on here every morning and start talking about the pedophilia rings and start naming names, or if I come on here every morning and start talking about the Jews, these are the only two groups he mentioned. He said, they'll come burn my house down. Now, that's the new guy that I guess is running the Power Hour, Joyce Riley's old operation. So those are my two reports.
Well, that's very, very interesting, Frank. Dennis.
You know, we've had a guy that did a great deal of work with us, but they went to his home in Canada and cut all the cables going in to prevent him from hosting shows and producing them. And finally, the harassment basically obviously had to be law enforcement in Canada that was doing it because they were so blatant in their face about it. They finally got him to cease and desist. So if they can't drive you off with all kinds of derision. By the way, I've been under attack by Deanna Spingola. I call her, you know, the Sphinx or something, the grommet. But she's been, on point attacking me in blogs about my Sandy Hook work to the point where it's ludicrous. But at one time, I do believe that she was on the right side of the truth. But clearly, all of these guys get co-opted by somebody waving a great deal of cash underneath their nose, or actually threatening them with "I'm going to kill your family" kind of thing, and they drop back and become fifth column for the Jews. So it's quite amazing to me that so many of the so-called reputable, decent purveyors of truth have turned out to be nothing more than Khazar shills that put out garbage and lies, such as Michael Rivero at What Really Happened, who I like to castigate and scream at because he's nothing but an obvious mouthpiece for the whole entire Jew world odor, as I call it, with agitation, propaganda, and BS that transcends even common decency. So, if you want to look at how hopeless it is, I mean, we've got a mainstream media that we always knew was corrupted and garbage, but now the alternative media is corrupted and garbage. So where do you turn next, other than handwritten letters to your friends about what the hell is going on? I mean, we're in dire straits because we've lost assets left and right here. Go ahead.
I could wholeheartedly state that Alex Jones and the InfoWars operation have become the new fake media.
Frank, that's really disappointing to hear.
They get a lot of attention, by the way, which is sad because they are fake.
Well, listen, we're almost to the end. Is there anything final thought you'd like to add, Frank, or you covered it for tonight? This is Jim Fetzer. I want to thank all of our callers. We got Brian in Minnesota, Paul in California, Peter in Florida, Brett on the road, Rob in Missouri, Mike from New York, Frank from North Carolina, especially Dennis Camino. Let me remind everyone once again, American Nightmare was struck down by YouTube. It had a wonderful collection. Gus Chambers doing a brilliant job of my many interviews, shows, programs, so forth. He now has a new channel, Gus Chambers Channel. Gus Chambers Channel. Check it out. If you liked American Nightmare, you can find what you had there now on Gus Chambers Channel. Dennis, I want to thank you again for coming on. It's always a pleasure to have you here. Agree or disagree, you certainly speak your position well and have lots of reasons to support it, which I admire.
Well, thank you, but I wanted to thank these callers once again because it's kind of nice to hear kindred spirits chime in. Not saying that we want to be an echo chamber all resoundingly in lockstep with each other, because that doesn't provide anybody with an opportunity to learn something.
And this is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, thanking my special guest Dennis Camino for being here and all of you for listening.